Thanks for being with us on The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. 20 years ago, Denzel Washington gave an Oscar-winning performance as a crooked Los Angeles police officer in the movie Training Day. Washington's delivery of the final, brutal, terrifying soliloquy has become the film's most memorable moment.
You think you can do this to me? I'm the police! I run here! You just live here!
I could not get Denzel Washington's chilling performance off my mind on Monday afternoon when I learned that six Los Angeles Police Department employees have filed suit in federal court, alleging that the city's vaccine mandate violates their constitutional rights. Now, about half of LAPD employees are vaccinated, which is considerably lower than the 66% vaccination rate for the general public in Los Angeles. I just want to scream, get the vaccine! So we can get on to some semblance of normal. From my ideological COVID corner, I find the resistance to vaccination by police officers sworn to serve and protect the public to be unconscionable. To my ears, the lawsuit sounds like this.
You think you can do this to me? I'm the police. I run here. You just live here.
Honestly, 1 year ago, I would never have believed that only 53% of Americans would choose vaccination. I would have predicted Black Friday, doorbuster-inspired smackdowns for every available shot. But there is only one thing I am more sure about than the absolute accuracy of my point of view. I'm actually sure that getting our nation past this impasse is going to require all of us to listen more carefully to one another. Why would vulnerable frontline workers like police officers resist a vaccination that could be life-saving for them and those they love? Why would hospital workers who have seen so many suffer and die from COVID-19 refuse to roll up their sleeves? Last week, in a new effort to get more Americans vaccinated, President Joe Biden announced an action plan that includes a vaccine mandate for more than 100 million working Americans.
I'm announcing that the Department of Labor is developing an emergency rule to require all employers with 100 or more employees that together employ over 80 million workers to ensure their workforces are fully vaccinated or show a negative test at least once a week.
And while the Biden administration was prepared for opposition from Republican leaders, it seems like they were a little more surprised to find considerable division among a long-standing ally of the Democratic Party, labor unions. Here's an exchange between CNBC's Scott Wapner and Sarah Nelson, the international president of the Association of Flight Attendants, back on August 12th.
Advocating is one thing, mandating is another. I hear you trying to make a nuance between those two.
Here's what I want to say, though, Scott. The nuances exist because I want to make sure that companies have the things in place that I was talking about. If you are doing all those things, if you are supporting your workers in those ways, then we can support a vaccine mandate. But to just say that we support it without making sure that the companies are taking these other steps is really dishonest and not fair to the workers.
And this is Michael Caine, a New York City teacher who founded New York Teachers for Choice. He's speaking during a rally against New York City's vaccine mandate for teachers and school staff.
We're putting this event on today, along with many rank and file union members who've contacted me, who have come out here, and who have said no to forced vaccine mandates.
Police? Flight attendants? Teachers? Instead of clamoring for vaccine access, many of them are opposing a vaccine mandate. Why? To help us understand, we turn to Stephen Greenhouse, former New York Times labor reporter and author of Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor. Welcome back to The Takeaway, Stephen.
Great to be here.
What is going on?
So unions represent, millions of Americans, and they have mixed views, just as, the overall American population has mixed views. Some unions, the nation's largest nurses union, are 100% behind, the mandate. One of the large teachers unions is enthusiastically backs a mandate. Some teachers protest. Other unions are kind of, well, we're not sure. Yes, we encourage it, but it's really, we're not really into mandates because we don't want you to force things down our members' throats. But they're kind of willing to go along. But they say, we're a union and, you know, we represent our members and we want to discuss, you know, how you're going to implement it. Are you going to fire people? Are you going to suspend people if they don't get vaccinated? And then some unions kind of just chicken out and don't say anything because they worry that if they say they're for a mandate, people will be mad at them. If they say they're against it, people will be mad at them. Then, Melissa, as you just pointed out, it's the law enforcement unions that are most strongly against it, which is surprising because these are the public safety unions. But, you know, here in New York City, where I am, and in many other cities, you see that, you know, members of police unions, you know, less than 50% have been vaccinated. And I think, you know, those are the most conservative unions, the public safety unions, the police unions, the border patrol unions. They supported Trump the most. And I think they've been most affected by this anti-science, don't tread on me, you know, libertarian view of politics.
So this strikes me as a really interesting and troubling intersection. We have had some conversations about police unions on this show before, and we've talked largely about police unions in the context of, I think, what everyone would recognize as direct acts of police violence over and against, for example, unarmed members of the community. But this is a very different kind of violence or threat. The idea that, you know, perhaps you could make a choice not to interact with all kinds of folks. For example, you could choose not to fly and you don't have to interact with flight attendants. But I mean, you don't really get a choice per se to interact with police officers. They make that choice about interacting with you. Don't they have a responsibility to be vaccinated? And shouldn't their unions be moving them in that direction?
I think, as you think, you know, every American, you know, has responsibility to get vaccinated, you know, for the good of public health, you know, for public solidarity, to minimize spread of this horrible disease. And you would think that these public servants, police officers, border patrol agents, firefighters would say, we're here to ensure the safety of the public. And we, more than other unions, more, you know, as much as nurses, more than teachers, we want to get vaccinated. And on the other hand, I think there's kind of this, you know, blue collar, leave me alone streak among many police. Like, we don't want the elite, you know, we don't want the Anthony Fauci's, we don't want the president telling us what we have to do. You know, we're the police, as you quoted Denzel Washington, you know, we run the city. And they're kind of, they bristle against authority, even though they enforce authority. So it's weird that police are so strongly against it. And I think that's because so many police officers are, you know, politically conservative and big fans of Donald Trump. And they, you know, swallow his, you know, vaccines aren't so great, masks aren't so great. And they listen to the Republican governors. And that's left the police department. That's left, you know, many Americans in a bad place, that they're resenting this very, very important tool to improve public health, vaccinations. No.
Having raised teenagers, I'm not completely unfamiliar with the phenomenon of folks who simply to push back against that sense of being controlled will sometimes make choices that are bad for themselves, right? So part of what I'm wondering is, from a leadership perspective, how do you, rather than just impose it, right? And on the one hand, I get it. Like, come on, enough already. Let's do this. But are there other ways, given that we're talking in here about unions, to actually sit down at the table, negotiate? I think it is fair to ask questions if you're a union about, well, what, you know, what happens if someone chooses not to comply? What are some of the steps that you might be able to see employers making relative to unions to move us forward?
Sure. So employers have, some have threatened to fire people if they don't get vaccinated. Some have said, well, we'll suspend you for like 60, you know, we're suspending you for 30 days or 60 days and you better get vaccinated. If not, sorry, we don't want you back here. And you asked, you know, should labor leaders kind of lead the way? I think many labor leaders are trying to lead the way and persuade their rank and file. Vaccines are very important, you know, for your safety, for the public safety, for your coworker safety, and you should do it. And I interviewed Randy Weingarten, the head of the American Federation of Teachers, yesterday, and she's been very outspoken in favor of vaccines. And she says she's getting a lot of pushback from rank and file members who say it's, you know, it's insanely invasive for the government to require that we get vaccinated. But I think, you know, Randy Weingarten sees, for the good of the teachers, for the good of students, for the good of the nation, it would be great if everybody could be vaccinated.
It's worth pointing out that maybe we shouldn't put so much at the feet of labor leaders when we really think about folks who are making it possible for so many not to get vaccinated. It really is Republican governors.
Yes. I mean, we see in Florida, we see in Texas, many union leaders, many parents, many PTAs, many school boards say this is crazy that we have governors who won't let our who won't let us require their kids wear masks. And yes, on one hand, DeSantis of Florida and Abbott of Texas are encouraging people to get vaccinated. But, you know, so many of their supporters are watching Fox News and told that vaccines are a bad thing. So it would be much better, in my view, if those states required vaccines of state employees, of county employees, because there's such an ongoing crisis right now in the South, with the lack of ICU beds right now. Available ICU beds, that it would be great if the governors, work more closely with the unions and school boards and everything to make sure that far more people are vaccinated.
Is there a way to hold accountable those, particularly lawmakers, who are not enforcing masking and vaccine mandates?
To me, not to have people wear masks, not to have people vaccine is just like, it's like you're being in league with the pandemic and, inviting more people to die. So I think mandates are a very helpful tool to minimize the spread of this horrible disease going forward.
Stephen Greenhouse is a former New York Times labor reporter and the author of Beaten Down, Worked Up, The Past, Present, and Future of American Labor. Stephen, thank you for joining us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Many of the nation's largest school districts are requiring teachers to get vaccinated this fall in order to keep their jobs. And teachers' unions in these areas, including Los Angeles and Chicago, have signaled their support for these mandates. But negotiating implementation is complicated. In New York City, an arbiter ruled that the city must give paid work outside the classroom to educators who qualify for religious or medical vaccine exemptions. The teachers' union opposed the city's initial proposal to force unpaid leave on unvaccinated educators with exemptions. All right. Randy Weingarten, let's talk this out, okay? Randy is the president of the American Federation of Teachers. It's good to have you with us, Randy.
Of course. It's really great to hear your voice.
So Randy, AFT has backed vaccine mandates for teachers since early August. Tell me why.
So, first off, let me kind of split vaccines and employer vaccine requirements. We were in the same position as, I think, President Biden, so many others, that we thought that with this vaccine, given, the polarization in this country, that trying to get people to get the shot voluntarily was going to be the most efficacious. It was going to be more effective. It was going to, help spread the word. Peer-to-peer tends to be one of the best ways to create some trust, as well as people talking to their doctors. So, that's in October of 2020, we did a big resolution on vaccines, and, we pushed to have it done voluntarily, but we pushed to have it. And we, as a union, have been historically very pro-vaccine. I am very pro-vaccine. And we wanted everyone who could take it to take it. And frankly, in terms of education and my membership, we were up to, before consideration of vaccine requirements, we were up to about 90% of our membership from, paraprofessionals and bus drivers to, school teachers to intensivist doctors who work for SUNY, we're up to about 90%. The, The reason we changed was and we changed to, look, we have to work with our employers on any of their vaccine requirements, not oppose them. And and that means having a voice in its implementation and making sure that the exemptions for religious or for medical needs were taken care of. And we changed because of the Delta surge. We have been doing a big back to school campaign all across the country. We gave out $5 million worth of grants involving about 1,800 of our 3,500 locals. And I've been traveling the country. I think I've been in 16 states, 24 cities since August 1. And you saw that that the surge was being, you know, was scary. And so if your North Star is safety, which is what ours has been, and you want to both open schools, keep them open, and keep everyone safe, then the most effective way to do this is vaccines, masks, and ventilation. And so we said we had to do what we could. And that's when we said, let's work with our employers on their vaccine requirements and make sure that teachers have a voice in the implementation. And I'll go one step farther. It's not just UCLA and Chicago. Frankly, if Bill de Blasio had been, as Eric Ward just said in the last couple of days, had been more open to actually working with the unions, I think that they would have had an agreement, not gone to arbitration, like you saw in UCLA and in Chicago. But we as a union, as an employer, AFT as a union, also put in a vaccine policy. We worked it out with our unions, and we also did the kind of options and that the arbitrator ruled in New York City, because you have to make sure you meet fear with facts and that you meet the different needs and make sure that people are protected. That's why you have to have vaccines, but that you have the kind of conditions and thoughtfulness in a policy that is required with, you know, in the middle of a pandemic.
Okay, so here's the challenge for me. And I have typically been a very strong supporter of teachers' unions, in the sense of I've had kids in public schools where there weren't unions and kids in school in places where there are unions, and have found that our educational experience in places where teachers are unionized and protected and have a right to speak on their own employment, it always ends up a better circumstance. That said, I was hot this year, like mad. and I want to put that out there as a parent, because I hear you about 90% of AFT members being vaccinated. But there are 8 million public education employees in the US. Only about, you know, a little over 1 million are AFT members. And I have to say, I have been stunned, just absolutely gobsmacked at the number of educators who want us to return our children to classrooms where they are not vaccinated, when we now know particularly that the Delta variant has this, you know, impact on young people. And when our young people, our little people, don't have the option to be vaccinated, they can't protect themselves. Help me to understand why teachers, who I know love students, I know they want to do the best by them, why in the world is this even a struggle?
You know, this is, first off, vaccines are a way of life. And as you can hear from my voice and from how we've changed policy within the AFT, you know, I believe that everyone who is, you know, in front of a student right now, you know, we have to have those, they have to be vaccinated. And I don't, you can hear, I don't disagree with you. This is what has happened in the United States. There's two bits of disinformation that are terrible. And you see it, frankly, I see it in terms of who it targets. It targets young women. It targets African-American young men. The junk that is on the, on the internet scares people to death. And then you have a bunch of people who, because of the polarization in the country, really have a sense that this is about their freedom. And it has become political as opposed to a public health issue. And so, you know, we think that vaccine requirements are important in terms of creating a safe circumstance for everyone. And so that's part of the reason why all across the country, Melissa, you're seeing our locals work with their employers on these things. But we have to get through it in some ways, sometimes person by person. And the ones that I have a lot of feeling for are people who are immunocompromised or, you know, are scared if they're in like the 9th month of pregnancy. We know the obstetricians and gynecologists have said that, you know, it not only is it safe to take the vaccine, but, you know, you should take the vaccine for a kid who has not yet been born. But that level of disinformation and misinformation combined with this toxic politics that were enabled ideologically by Trump and others has created this maelstrom. You have great teachers people who are otherwise great teachers who just think that we are, you know, that this shot is going to hurt them in some way, form, manner. But we as educators, it's really important that we're doing the work we have to do. That's part of the reason that we're negotiating these kind of plans. And I do believe that if we can get people into school, think about what happened in New York City yesterday. I talked to a bunch of my friends. I was on the road. A bunch of my colleagues. The joy of kids being back in school, the joy of seeing kids, the semblance of normalcy, the rhythm of our lives that school provides. I think that if we can get schools open, keep them open, keep everyone safe, that we'll be able to actually heal the nation far more than we have in the last few years.
One last question for you. Do you think that the public perception of teachers and of teachers unions has been damaged at all during this phase of the pandemic? I feel like early on in the pandemic, there was a recognition when parents had to do the teaching at home or support that teaching at home. It's pretty clear how hard the work is, how valuable it is. But I'm wondering on the back end now, if you think that teachers unions and teachers have been damaged in public perception.
Well, I think that first off, I don't think that there's another profession, maybe with the exception of doctors, that on a voluntary basis had such a high percentage of vaccination. I think if we had seen that all across the country, we wouldn't have the Delta surge right now. So I think what's happened is that teachers always rise to the occasion and do what their kids need. And that's what they've done throughout the pandemic. And, you know, we just have to get through the fears and the polarization and the misinformation that they and others have. So I think there was far worse backlash when you had this incredibly terrible period of time between last November and March and April, when, you know, we were trying to get schools open and you had conservative media suggesting that teachers were lazy when anyone who's ever taught remote, hybrid, or any of this stuff understands exactly what teachers have done. So, you know, they're people too. And let's just say that it's a very small number of people who are concerned about the vaccine. There's even a smaller number of people who have the medical or the religious exemptions. And, you know, I've watched all across the country, us being able to reopen schools, both the trepidation and the joy. And frankly, the places that we're having more problems are the governors like DeSantis and Abbott, who refuse to actually put any safeguards in. So I think, you know, teachers want what kids need, and we'll get through this.
And shout out, let me just say, to both the first grade teacher and my daughter's second grade teacher this year, who have gotten us through the pandemic. They sit in a very special place in my heart. It was hard work, and I so appreciate everything that my school and teachers have done. Randy Weingarten of the AFT, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.